We are the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, or ACAM for short.
Hello, welcome to the Papers podcast series for the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, or ACAM for short. I'm Jo Carlo, a freelance journalist with a specialism in psychology. In this series, we speak to authors of papers published in one of ACAM's three journals. These are the Journal of Child Psychology and Psychiatry, commonly known as JCPP, the Child and Adolescent Mental Health, known as CAM, and JCPP Advances. Today I'm interviewing epidemiologist Dr. Marika Leoni, a management consultant at Boston Consulting Group and the first author of the paper Melatonin Use and the Risk of Self-Harm and Unintentional Injuries in Youths with and Without Psychiatric Disorders, recently published in the Journal of Child Psychology and Psychiatry. This paper will be the focus of today's podcast. If you're a fan of our Papers podcast series, please subscribe on your preferred streaming platform. Let us know how we did with a rating or review, and do share with friends and colleagues. Marika, thanks for joining me. Can you start with an introduction about who you are and what you do?
Hi, Joe. Very nice to be here. And so as you pronounced very correctly, my name is Marika Leoni. I come originally from Italy. At the moment, I live in Stockholm in Sweden. I've been living here for the past 6 years. And basically, I have a background in the life sciences, in healthcare, and the pharmaceutical industry. And I hold a PhD in psychiatric and genetic epidemiology from the Karolinska Institute, which is a medical university here in Stockholm. I'm a management consultant right now. I joined the Boston Consulting Group here in Stockholm in January 2023. And my role focuses basically on helping businesses achieve their strategic goals and drive growth, basically, in a constantly changing business environment. And I mainly focus with clients in the healthcare and life science sectors. Prior consulting, I work at the Department of Medical Epidemiology and Biostatistics at Karolinska with the research group of Dr. Sarah Bergen. And my area of research focused on the causes, consequences, and co-occurring diseases among youth and adults with depression. And to address these questions, we basically used a lot of data from several Swedish national registers.
Fantastic. Thank you. We're going to look at your paper today, but before we go into the detail, can you tell us what is known about the relationship between sleep disorders, injuries, and self-harm in young people?
Well, sleep disorders such as insomnia are common in youth, particularly among those suffering from psychiatric disorders. So problems with sleep in children and adolescents can, of course, have a significant impact on daytime functioning, on health and development, and can have negative effects on cognitive skills, emotional regulation, and behavior. And from prior research, we know that disrupted sleep among young people is also a risk factor for unintentional injuries, such as falls, sport-related injuries, bicycle and vehicle accidents, but they could increase the risk for suicidal and non-suicidal self-harm.
So let's turn to the paper itself. This is Melatonin Use and the Risk of Self-Harm and Unintentional Injuries in Youths with and Without Psychiatric Disorders, recently published in the JCPP. Can you give us an overview? What did you look at and why?
So first of all, well, given the established link between sleep disorders, injuries, and self-harm in youth, we decided to explore whether sleep treatment could be associated with a lower rate of self-injury, but also unintentional injuries in young people with and without psychiatric disorders. Well, as you also said, we were looking into melatonin, and the reason why we decided to focus on melatonin is because basically that is, the most commonly prescribed drug for sleep disturbances in children and adolescents in Sweden, but also in other countries. And just to bring a little bit more of context, most of the listeners will know that melatonin is this naturally occurring hormone in our body that basically controls the sleep-wake cycle.
And can you tell us a little about the methodology that you used for this study?
Well, we conducted a population-based cohort study. So we look at the entire Swedish population using the registers that I just mentioned at the beginning of this podcast. And we were able to identify more than 25,000 children and teenagers who initiated melatonin treatment between ages 6 and 18. So our hypothesis when we started the study was that melatonin use could be associated associated with a decreased risk of self-harm. So that's what we did. We examined the risk of self-harm, but also, as I mentioned, also unintentional injuries in periods before and after melatonin treatment initiation. And advantage of our study is that we also estimated relative risks of injuries using a so-called within individual design. So basically what it means is, like, usually when you do this kind of analysis, so observational studies, you want to compare two groups that needs to be as similar as possible to each other. So in this case would be one group that is using melatonin and another group that maybe doesn't use melatonin. And then you want to compare basically the risk for some outcome. But in this case, people that use melatonin and people that do not use melatonin might be very different in so many different ways. So comparing these two groups might lead to false associations, so something that is very difficult to interpret. So as I mentioned, one advantage was that we were able to use this within individual design. So that means that we were able to compare each person to themselves before and after melatonin to see if the risk of this person towards self-harm or other injuries changed. And by doing this, basically, we could take into account a lot of background factors that do not change with time. For example, your sex, genetics, the age at melatonin initiation, early life risk factors, and so on.
What key findings did you come up with? What can you highlight some of the findings?
In terms of the study population, so basically all the cohort that we were able to look at, we found out that out of these 25,000 plus children and teenagers who initiated melatonin treatment, over 85% also had at least one psychiatry disorder. Mainly, we found that that was attention deficit hyperactive disorder or ADHD, anxiety disorders, depression, or autism spectrum disorder. Then in terms of risk, so we look at absolute risk and relative risk. So in terms of absolute risk, we observed that accidental injuries, so falls or transport accidents, they were occurring at a fairly similar rate before and after starting melatonin. So not much change in there. But in contrast, the risk of self-harm steadily increased in the months preceding melatonin prescription, peaking in the month immediately prior to medication, and then dropping by about half in the months following the initiation of treatment. And this was particularly evident among teens with depression and or anxiety disorders, and specifically among girls. Basically, girls were displaying the greater rates compared to boys of self-harm. Specifically, we saw also that girls were approximately 5 times more likely to harm themselves compared with boys. Then in terms of relative risks, we found that the risk for self-harm were statistically significantly lower during the months following melatonin treatment initiation, and they were decreasing by around 40% in the month following melatonin treatment initiation. Finally, as I said, a lot of these patients also received other diagnoses. We had a lot of patients with depression and anxiety, so we wanted to check whether the use of other medications might have affected our findings. So we basically repeated the analysis, excluding antidepressant users, and we found that we had the same pattern of results. So the risk of self-harm in the month following melatonin treatment initiation still decreased, specifically by around 55% among girls with psychiatric disorders compared to the last unmedicated month.
So, Marika, what are the implications of your findings for CAM professionals?
Well, I think that these findings are very important, but it's very important also to understand what they could mean. So several mechanisms could explain our findings. For example, it is possible that melatonin treatment directly reduces the risk of intentional self-harm by treating sleep disorders related to psychiatric comorbidities, especially anxiety and depression. So that's very important to keep in mind for CAMS professionals. But it's also important to take into account that another possibility is that melatonin prescription could be also an indicator of the medical attention that these young patients are receiving in the healthcare system. So as a consequence, beyond melatonin treatment, a number of other factors could play a role in treating these sleep disorders and or basically preventing self-harm in these patients. And these things could be clinicians and caregivers' increased awareness and monitoring of these patients, some other behavioral interventions, maybe psychotherapy or the placebo effect, or also, as we said, other medications. So there are different explanations around that. So overall, these findings suggest that treating sleep disturbances associated with depression and anxiety might be an important factor in decreasing the risk of self-harm in this pediatric population. But of course, further studies are indeed needed to examine the efficacy of melatonin and other sleep improvement interventions in reducing self-harm.
Are there any other recommendations that emerge from your research that you would like to mention?
It's important to know that these findings are specific to youth with psychiatric disorders and shouldn't be broadly applied to all young individuals. At least we can't really prove that from our study. So therefore, while good sleep practices are definitely crucial for everyone, the use of melatonin, particularly in children and adolescents, should be carefully monitored and discussed with healthcare professionals due to potential side effects and also dosage considerations.
Is there anything else in the paper that you would like to highlight?
Again, maybe a little bit of another limitation is the fact that this study did not take into account the possible role of non-pharmacological treatments. So again, psychotherapy, as I mentioned before, or other behavioral interventions, which is very important to, and it will be very interesting to look at.
You talked about the need for further research. So I'm just wondering, are you planning any follow-up research? Or is there anything else in the pipeline that you'd like to share with us?
Well, Joe, we're actually not planning any follow-up studies at this moment. I mean, I'm not part of that research group myself, and I'm not sure they are still following up this. But of course, we hope that other groups will seek to replicate this finding and also explore, for example, whether these results could also be applied to other cohorts, let's say adults.
Finally, what are your take-home messages for our listeners?
Sure, I think I have three in total. So number one is that melatonin is linked to a decreased risk of self-harm. So again, our study indicates that using melatonin is linked to a lower risk of intentional self-harm in adolescent girls with psychiatric conditions. It's important to know that we didn't explore non-pharmacological treatments and that this study design can't definitely determine whether melatonin directly causes this effect. Number two is that sleep hygiene matters. This research supports the idea that enhancing sleep habits in young individuals might be a valuable strategy for reducing self-harm. And then finally, number three, you need to consult a doctor. So before considering any new medication, even over-the-counter ones like melatonin in many countries nowadays, and especially in pediatric cases, it is extremely crucial to seek guidance from a medical professional.
You mentioned the importance of sleep hygiene. Can you just give a few tips of what good sleep hygiene looks like?
I guess different things depends on preferences of each person, but I would say definitely keeping a routine is very important. So trying to go to sleep at the same time and waking up at the same time also during weekends. I know it's very difficult, but perhaps just like, you know, trying a little bit could help. And then, of course, trying to have some downtime during, you know, 1 or 2 hours before going to sleep, I think is very important. So again, the usual, so limiting some screen time or something similar, just like to unwind and really try to prepare your body to sleep. And I guess other things, I mean, personally, and this is again, like my personal opinion, I guess it's very important also that, you know, your bed is supposed to be a place where you sleep, so your body can really, you know, recognize that as the place where you sleep rather than like the place where you are, I don't know, whatever, eating or like, you know, working from your laptops or something like that. So just creating good habits. And again, everybody could have different tips, but overall, yeah, very important to watch out for that.
Thank you so much. For more details on Dr. Marieke Leoni, please visit the ACAM website, www.acam.org, and Twitter at ACAM. ACAM is spelled A-C-A-M-H. And don't forget to follow us on your preferred streaming platform. Let us know if you enjoyed the podcast with a rating or review, and do share with friends and colleagues.